How to make the transition from hobbyist to professional detailer.
I'm Ivan.
I'm Nick.
And this is the DIY Detail Podcast. Now, before you get up in arms, transitioning from hobbyist to detailer actually has nothing to do with the quality of the work. There's a lot of hobbyists out there that their quality of work surpasses, unfortunately, many professional detailers.
Yeah, being a professional is about being profitable. There's a lot of layers to this. This is your wheelhouse. I mean, I could share some of my story, but let's start with what it means to be a weekend warrior, a hobbyist detailer, the guy in the driveway who falls in love with it to the point where his wife is wondering why you're spending so many hours on the damn car. You need to be inside. It becomes a real passion.
It is. And detailing is definitely a passion-driven business. The part of that, though, when you're doing this for money, for other people, there are some legalities that need to happen. First of all, you need a proper business license. Doing it in your driveway Saturday morning on your own car is one thing. Having a customer's vehicle there, your homeowners association may not take kindly to that. Your municipality may not take kindly to that. So you need to have everything properly put into place. There are some cities that don't allow mobile detailers. There are some cities that if you want to have a detailing shop or a car wash, it has to be between this street and this street and this street and this street, nowhere else. So you need to learn those legalities before moving forward.
So is that what you would do first? You'd get a business license?
The business license and insurance. But a lot of times you won't get insurance without a business license. So the business license by far is the most, is the key element in the professional realm. You need to have a business license. And there's some municipalities that, guess what? If you're a mobile detailer, you don't need a business license. So you really need to investigate this. And it's not a blanket statement. Every municipality is different. Every county is different. So you need to do your own research on this one.
So what about insurance? That seems fairly expensive, but a big bleep up is incredibly expensive when you burn paint on a Ferrari. Not to say
exactly.
You're going to be polishing a Ferrari right away, but where do you go for insurance? What do you ask for? Let's say you've got your garage at home or you're a mobile detailer. What kind of insurance should you be asking for?
So for us, we had actually three types of insurance. We had, first of all, what's called garage keeper's insurance, and that is for the vehicle that's in your garage that you're keeping that garage. Then we had general insurance for the building, fire insurance, all that. So, you know, the shop itself. Then we had liability insurance. So yes, and it can get a little expensive.
What is liability insurance?
So liability insurance is the customer drives home, you accidentally put tire shine on their floor mat, their foot slides off the brake, and they go into a wall. That is liability insurance.
What about you burn through the paint on a car and it's $3,000 at the body shop?
You pay it out of pocket.
That's not even insured?
No, that's just stupidity. So your insurance company won't insure your professional mistakes. And that is considered, you're a paint correcting professional. That is not a mistake they're insuring. The mistake they'll insure is you have the polisher in hand, you trip and it falls on the hood and dents the hood. That your insurance company will pay.
And that's not liability, that's garage keepers?
That's garage keepers.
Okay. So if you wanted to live on the edge, no, we're not going to recommend anything but the right way to do it.
Yeah, do not live on the edge.
Which one do you start with though? Garage keepers for sure?
The three.
All three. Okay.
Yeah.
This is official information here. Either way, you'd say all three.
Yeah. Find an insurance broker, not necessarily an insurance company, but an insurance broker that understands small business and that understands your particular situation. And don't hide anything from your insurance company. Hiding something from your insurance company is guaranteeing that you're paying them to not insure you. So let's say, as an example, in my shop, we started off, we had insurance for $500,000 worth of vehicles. One day I turn around and, wait a minute, we have $800,000 worth of vehicles in here. That was wrong. And had the shop burned down 2 minutes after I realized this, I would not have been insured. The insurance companies, most of them will insure 80% of, you have to be insured, excuse me, for 80% of the value of what you're insuring. So in other words, we'll put it in round numbers. You have $1 million worth of vehicles in the shop. If you're not insured for at least $800,000, you're not insured at all.
Wow.
So, and every company has different riders and different ways of looking at this, but these are things you need to understand. You're going into this as a business. You have to be a business owner at this point. You're not a hobby anymore. It's a fun business, but you have to look at all these business aspects.
So we've established the insurance part, not as fun. What about, hey, I like detailing. I've got some tools in my arsenal, but I want to take this seriously. What do I need? What tools, what chemicals do I need, bare essentials, to be considered a pro?
What you have already. There are pro detailers that basically have a bucket, some soap, a wash mitt, and some drying towels. And they can be considered a pro detailer because they have the insurance. Between the pro and the hobbyist, the difference is the insurance. It's the business license. It's all of that. It's not the tools that you have.
And apparently not the level of results.
No. There are, like I said, a lot of hobbyists out there that do a much better job than, unfortunately, many professionals.
So the barrier for entry is pretty low in terms of being a pro detailer.
Right. The barrier for entry is be legal. Have everything in place that you actually need to have to be a legal business wherever you're doing business.
What are some of the biggest mistakes people make around this transition as they first start out?
Buying too much stuff. You know, basically overtaxing their resources to the point of they're stressed out. And then when you get stress, you make mistakes, et cetera, et cetera. I always tell people when I'm doing counseling or consulting, better word, counseling in French, but consulting in English.
Well, consulting turns into counseling when they tell you about their issues and all that.
Right. But nonetheless, have 6 months worth of salary already in your bank account.
Well, so we're talking about not a weekend warrior pro. You're talking about if you're going to go full time.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Continue on. So six months of salary.
Have 6 months worth of salary.
After take home or before? Or
whatever your salary is. Your take home. Yeah. Okay. So basically, you need to be able to live off your savings for the next 6 months. You won't need it, but have it there. Be ready. Another thing that a lot of people skip or don't do is actually get a business line of credit. And you should have a business line of credit. And if your bank or credit union is offering you a business line of credit, take it. A lot of people are very proud to say, I built this business without any loans or without any debt. So instead of building a business that's profitable in 1 year, it took you 5 years. Is there any good point behind that?
It does take money to make money. I wonder if folks had saved up a boatload of cash instead of the credit line, right? There's the Dave Ramsey line where you should never take out any credit. How much money should you save up? How much credit do you think you need to do some things right?
So basically, if your bank or credit union is offering you credit, take it. You don't have to use it, but that credit limit is there. So the day that you do need it, it's there. How many times have you heard this? And I've heard this way too many times. A detailer going, oh, my polisher broke, but I have to wait to buy one. I can't afford it. If you can't afford a $300 polisher, you're not really in business. So that is where that line of credit may have come in for that person. Or an incredible deal comes up and you'd be stupid to pass up this deal, but you don't have the cash flow to get that deal. So now you can get that deal. And a lot of detailers, there is a credit processing companies like Square, like Stripe, etc. Even the MasterCard, Visa, they will offer you a loan based on your income coming in from the credit cards. Look at the interest rate of that. The business line of credit right now, somewhere around, and we're in early 2023, somewhere around 6 to 7%. They're offering their loans at 15 or 20%.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they take forever to pay off.
They take forever to pay off. And basically you're getting cash flow because you're getting money in from your credit card purchases, but then all of a sudden it's disappearing to pay that loan.
Yeah. So that $300 detail all of a sudden looks like whatever.
Right.
$220. I didn't do the math there, but.
Yeah. And sidebar here, another mistake some people make is not accepting credit cards. When's the last time you paid cash for something?
It's been a while.
Yeah. When's the last time you paid cash for something over $100?
Been a long while.
Right. you need to have some form of credit card processing. I'm sorry, it just is the way of the world.
Is it possible for small businesses, even offering details like coding companies, to offer installment plans? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, basically your credit card processing company will do that for you. And there are other third party, but generally their rates are not very favorable. So,
but like you couldn't do a payment plan with Square. So who would I go through if I had Square or like my point of...
Your point of sale normally is the one doing that for you. Your bank might be able to do that. And there are companies that specifically do that sort of thing. But you go out and buy a TV at a big box store and they say no payments. Or not, TVs are cheap now, but you buy all your appliances, okay? So you've spent $5,000 or $7,000 on the appliances for your house, and they say, well, for 24 months, interest-free. First of all, as a consumer, if they're telling me 24 months interest-free, I'm going to take that because my money is worth more in my bank account than in theirs. But always ask them, what if I pay cash? And if the price is the same, yeah, take the 24 months interest-free. But that company is actually paying in the background the interest for those 24 months. So that's been added to the price of whatever they're selling.
Okay.
And in the detailing world, offering that sort of thing is really not necessary. We're doing, you know, $1,500 to maybe $3,000 details. If you're adding PPF on that, it might get up to $5,000. Most people have that limit on their credit card.
Okay. So that's a little bit less critical.
Right.
So you get that squared away. What other mistakes do detailers make early on?
Not trusting employees.
Wait, when do you even go to employees? I feel like most people start out as the craftsman.
Right. And then you've got a hobby that pays you instead of having a real business. So employees are an essential thing as far as I'm concerned. What an employee gives to the employer or to the business is now that you're running your business, you're an entrepreneur, you can actually run your business. Your business isn't running you. And too many detailers, since the barrier of entry to be a detailer is very low, doesn't take a big investment. You have a lot of people that have this mindset that I'm going to grind, I'm going to do it all myself, I'm not going to hire an employee, I have my secret formulas, I have my, you know, I have everything that I'm doing and I don't want to share it with anyone else because if I teach someone else, they're just going to go and start their own business. If they wanted to go and start their own business, they would have done that already. I had employees that had their own business and they were working for me because they didn't want to run a business anymore. So having an employee frees you up to actually run your business as opposed to your business running you.
All right. So where along the line do you get a website and or pay for SEO? What I did is I started detailing some family vehicles. They posted on their Facebook pages. They posted on the, you know, local community page that ask
right.
Enter City here or whatever. Who's the best detailer? And they'd post, hey, if you want a detailer, you know, it started to get some real growth from their credibility.
Right.
And it sort of went from there, right?
Yeah.
But I guess how do you start getting business? When or if should you get a website? And then when should you pay for SEO or advertising?
So if your website is done correctly, the SEO is already there. It's not a separate charge. There are some companies specifically in the detailing space that do that. They build, first of all, proper websites and SEO without charging you some monster amount. I've heard of detailers paying $10,000 and $15,000 for a website. That's just absurd because the day the website is put online, it's pretty much obsolete. And it just keeps getting more obsolete every day.
So what do you think a detailer should pay for a website?
$2,000 or $3,000, not much more. The website these days is not as relevant as it used to be.
Really?
Yeah. It's a necessary evil. It's like insurance almost. It's a necessary evil, but it isn't as relevant as it used to be. Social media is relevant. Also, SEO, search engine optimization, is much, much higher on the list than an actual website. You could just have a landing page. If it has great SEO, and you have Google reviews and Google reviews and having a Google page set up for your business. Those are things that will bring you back, will give you good ROI.
What else have I not brought up? I feel like this is sort of how to make that transition. We could go all the way down the rabbit hole on how to be a successful business, which is obviously what you do with Detailers Business Academy.
Right. The other thing is, this is not your life. This is your business. This is your, you know, your form of income. Have work-life balance. Doing the 60, 70 hour weeks, no. For 1 week or two, maybe, as you're painting the shop walls and stuff. After that, no. Your family comes first. Your life comes first, way before your business. And you will actually be more successful in terms of your well-being, but also monetarily, by not doing those 60 and 70 hour weeks.
But I feel like early on you have to wow people to get them to sing your praises and build customers for life.
You can wow people in 40 hours just as much as you can wow people in 70 hours.
Okay.
It's the wow factor comes down to your performance as a customer service representative. People are not buying the coding company you're selling. People are not buying the products you're using. People are buying your skills. People are buying your skills as a customer service rep. Remember, detailing is just like a restaurant. Restaurant, people come in, they're hungry, we feed them, they go away, they're happy. Detailing is the same thing. People come in, they have a dirty car, we clean it, they go away, they're happy. It's the same thing.
Wait, but you say it doesn't matter what they use. I think they should sell their customers a nice maintenance kit of DIY detail products.
Oh, definitely. No, but what I'm saying is, and this is a mistake that I see too many detailers do, is they identify themselves as their coding company. So coatings are a big part of the business. And it's a good way to transition from a hobbyist to a professional. Because honestly, if you're doing one coating a week at $1,500, that's a lot more than your McDonald's pay.
Yeah.
So that can be good. But on the other side of things is having that identity be your own. I see too many detailers wearing a shirt with a company logo on them that isn't their company. It's their coding brand. What happens if someday you have a disagreement with that coding brand? You change coding brands.
I've seen it happen. This is why you bring this up.
Well, you've had it happen to yourself.
Well, I didn't have a disagreement with
OptiCoat. I mean, you switched
Pro.
How many times?
Yeah. But I started with OptiCoat, and then I was still with them, and then went with Ceramic Pro, and I liked them, and then Owner's Pride, and and I've used other ones as well that don't require certification. So the detailers out there who know what I'm talking about, you want to try everything, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it can be hard to be loyal to a brand when there's always something new coming out.
Yeah.
Again, 6 years detailing now, I would say that was closer to the first 3 years when I was like that.
Yeah.
What do we have over here, you know?
Oh, look, it's shiny.
Yeah, but you know, the older I get, the more I listen to Ivan of like, how many hundreds of detailers have you counseled on trying to make profitable lives out of detailing? You've seen people make the mistakes over and over again.
Yeah, I've seen people make mistakes, and I've also seen successes. And that is why I keep doing it, because there are some people that eventually do listen to me and go, oh, wait a minute, this actually works. I don't have to work 60 hours a week. I don't have to be breaking my back. I can have an employee wash the car while I'm answering the phone. Another big mistake that detailers make, and I've mentioned this a few times before, if your phone rings, answer it. It's as simple as that. I don't know how many detailers I've called that they don't answer their phone and they don't even have a voicemail. I'm not their customer. What if I was a customer? How do you get a hold of the person when they're not answering their phone?
Text message?
They don't answer texts. They don't even have voicemail. Be accessible. The other thing is,
what about be accessible? Sorry.
Yeah.
Will you hold on to that thought?
Yeah.
Remember that. What about your professional image? Like, I've seen some guys who are spouting off on politics and firearms and, you know, just things that I'm not taking a stance on, me, but that people have opinions on, and it's their personal Facebook page, it's not their business. Like, what advice do you have for people? Once you say I'm going to be a professional detailer and own a business, how should they manage their social media? Because not everybody's going to do the same. I mean, everyone's going to totally be this, like, I'm going to meet everybody in the middle and be this like, people get to have their opinions, right?
It's America. Definitely.
But, like, how do you counsel them to handle their personal social media once they become a business owner?
So, few things. Get a fake account. If you want to go off your rocker, say, I hate bald people. Bald people, I don't trust them, whatever. If you have a thing against bald people and you're always spouting off against bald people, you may alienate some bald people that want to be your customer.
Right.
So maybe get a fake account. There's unfortunately many fake accounts on Facebook.
Go on Twitter with a fake account and just say what you need to say.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess I'm talking about Facebook, really.
Yeah, well, Facebook, Twitter, whatever the platform is, try to be, for lack of a better term, politically correct. That is one of the things that, unfortunately, you may side with a certain political party. And come election time, especially in the U.S., things get really divisive.
Yeah.
You know, you're either this side or that side. And if you're flying this camp's, flag, and the other one is flying that camp's flag, you've lost that customer.
Sorry. No, I mean, yeah, it's a very divisive age.
Exactly. So keep politics, keep religion out of it. And, I had one guy I was counseling was an avid smoker. Hmm. To him, smoking was a right. He should be able to smoke in a hospital. He should be able to smoke in an airplane.
Yeah.
He should be able to smoke in a restaurant. And he was all over Facebook about it. And basically, he lost his business over it. Because he was vacuuming people's cars with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. And there were pictures of him doing that on his social media.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then the customer was complaining that my car smells like cigarettes. Oh, they don't. Well, you smell like cigarettes. So anyways, that's one of the things. The other thing that a lot of people don't have getting into this, and it's really important, is a business plan.
Oh, how do you do that? Tell me about that.
So there are a lot of resources online and in person to have a business plan. There are some organizations like SCORE is one of them, or Toastmasters, that you can go to, and it's very low cost or no cost, depending on where you are, and you join these groups. SCORE is basically entrepreneurs like myself that have retired that are helping local entrepreneurs build their businesses. They'll help you with your business plan. Going to the bank and say, I want to open a business. What do I need? They'll give you a form to fill out that is basically a business plan. And detailing, yes, you can wing it. Entrepreneurship, you can't. I think I stumped you there.
The pregnant pause there. I just processing all the things that I didn't do when I started my own business. I had a really good point that I wanted to bring up, and it was training and coaching. At what point do you decide I'm going to pay for professional development? My opinion is you should sort of do this, like punctuate your whole life with professional development. One thing I've told you before is you never know when you meet up with human beings in person for a training, what's going to come out of that.
Exactly.
The conversations, the friendships, the, hey, I have this weird paint. I don't know what to do with it. Do you have any advice on this or this stain or what would you do in this situation? To the point where, we did a training together where I invited you to my shop and now we started a business together. So like that would never have happened if I never met you, right?
No, exactly.
Like, this is a tangible result from my belief in professional development. So what do you think about that?
For me, I've had business coaches for the last 40 years and I'm a business coach myself. I continue to have business coaches. And a business coach is not a lifelong relationship unless it happens like this. But what I'm saying is, get the most you can get out of that business coach. And if you're still with that coach 6 months or a year later, something's wrong. You should have moved on to another one.
Why?
If they can't transmit all their information that they know to help you out in that amount of time, then basically you just got yourself a subscription service. And subscription service is great for your medications. It's great for, you like cashews. You want to get a box of cashews every month. That's great. That's a subscription service. That's where it's good.
A box of cashews?
I don't know. I'm just, does anybody do subscription? There's subscription.
Netflix. There's Spotify.
Tangible things. Like there's Glovebox for detailers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a subscription service.
Okay.
Or there's a Dollar Shave Club or whatever. There's all sorts of different ones out there.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Basically, a business coach should be wanting to dump you after a certain amount of time. Yes, they'll have more information for you. And it's good to, if you like that business coach's approach, maybe, in the beginning you're doing it every week or every 2 weeks, then stretch it out to every 3 months and every 6 months.
One thing that I think is really important to note here, if you're not single, if you have any kind of life, a family, being a weekend detailer can put a lot of strain on the family because essentially you got no free time at that point.
No, exactly.
So what do you think about the weekend detailers, and then how long should they play around with that before they decide to go pro? I know you mentioned saving up 6 months worth of expenses. So if you can ever do that, that maybe is an answer. I mean, how long should you flirt with part-time detailing before you jump all the way in?
The least amount of time possible. Because now you're putting a strain not only on you, but you're putting a strain on your relationships. You're putting a strain on your future, your family, everything. I'm a big proponent of never work more than 40 hours a week. It's just 5 days, 8 hour days, we're good. And after that, no. You need time to yourself. This man here is a prime example of that. We'll be filming 7 or 8 hours in, he just goes away. Not that he's physically he's still here, but the brain is just not there. He's not paying attention. It's just, you know.
Sometimes I'll go and take a nap for 5 or 10 minutes, you know?
Right.
It's like, and you never question that.
No.
Like human beings, like I know it's easy to drink 9 Monster energy drinks and get hopped up and stay up all night, and the American ethos is to keep working. And no one's going to give it to you. I mean, there's times when you have to really work longer than you want to, but you just don't get the same results if you're flat out exhausted.
No, and another thing that in business a lot of people do is they set themselves up for failure. Their pricing. One thing that has never worked in the history of man is I'm going to start cheap, and when I get a bit of business, I'm going to raise my prices.
But what if you're not very good and you don't feel like you can charge that?
Still charge what your area is being charged.
So is that a fake it till you make it?
A little bit. Now, in a sense, because let's say I've been in business 40 years. I charge $2,000 for ceramic coating. Nick comes in, I'm going to start detailing. He charges $500 for ceramic coating. What does that do to the industry locally? My customers are looking at me going, you're charging $2,000, he's charging $500. They're not going at me, they're not looking at me saying you're charging too much. They're looking at Nick going, you're only charging $500, how bad of a job are you doing? Now, the other thing is, for me, that $2,000 job takes me 6-7 hours. For Nick, that $2,000 job or that $500 job is taking him 15-20 hours.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, charge the same as everybody else, but yes, it's taking you longer. As you get more efficient, you'll get to your hourly rate that you're looking for. And a lot of people are going, wait a minute, detailers are making over $100 an hour? No, we're not. We're charging over $100 an hour. There's a huge difference. When you get into business, there's a lot of little costs that are there that add up, and they add up very quickly. Mm. So the insurance we talked about, you need an accountant, your incorporation or your whatever.
Do you get an accountant right away?
Yes.
Or would you wait until you start getting business?
Start with an accountant. The accountant, whatever you're paying your accountant, the accountant will give back to you in saving you money and making you a better business owner. So an accountant, your utilities, your cell phone, your all that stuff adds up. And a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to charge $50 an hour and I'm going to be rich. Then they realize that, wait, I have to pay rent or I have to pay fuel. I have tools to buy. I have supplies to buy. I have insurance to pay. It ends up costing them $75 an hour. So they're paying their customers $25 every hour they work on their car.
Okay, here's a question. Because there's so many things we could talk about forever.
Yeah.
What are the basic packages you recommend that a detailing business should offer? Especially, I'm just starting out. How many times do you get asked, what should I charge? What packages should you start with and ballpark pricing?
So, again, go to your local environment. Find the detailers around you and see what they're charging. You don't want to be 50% above them, but you definitely don't want to be 50% below them. So go to your own local market. Figure out what it is. Do something that's called market research. If I want to open a restaurant, first of all, opening a restaurant is a bigger investment. So what do people do? They do market research. They do traffic pattern research. The last shop I opened, we paid for a traffic study to find out. Yeah, to find out, is this the right place to have a shop? Wow. Because one of the things, you know, I'll get off in this strange little industrial basin that I'm going to get a $3,000 or 3,000 square foot space, and it's only going to cost me $50 a month.
And that's, you'll get there, you'll get people there with Google and such.
Right. I'm going to advertise in our last shop. Sure, we were paying a lot more per square foot. We paid zero in advertising.
You were on a main drag.
Yeah, our neighbor across the street was a Ford dealership. On the other, one side we had Volkswagen, the other side we had Hyundai. We were amongst the dealerships. Our building was the same size as the dealerships. Our lot was the same size as the dealerships. So, you know, the town had divided. These are all going to be dealerships one day. We just happened to pick up a dealership.
That was an expensive piece of property, I'll bet.
Yeah, it was. But
you were running a business.
I'm running a business. And that expensive piece of property brought me a lot more business just because of where it was. When we did the traffic study, that, you know, 5 mile stretch of road was the busiest 5 mile stretch of road in our community.
So I know that you're a big fan of Urable.
Yes.
We met those folks at SEMA. Wonderful folks. What a great program here. Nothing but rave reviews. Would you get a website before Urable? And Urable, at what point would you get that? What is it? Why is it important? And when would you get it?
So Urable is a CRM, customer relationship management software. What the CRM does for you is help you actually look like a business. So in other words, it's going to automatically send emails to your customer with reminders that you have an appointment coming up at this date. You have this. It's going to help you formulate your business and schedule your business. The owner of Urable, Michael, great guy, actually co-owner because his kids are part owners with him. He started this to help detailers. He's an avid car enthusiast. He had his car detailed by many detailers in the past.
And I heard his story. Yeah. And he's like, they were doing such a fantastic job, but the customer service was like
horrendous.
I mean, they were good people, but just the way it all was handled, they thought, this is like amateur hour. When I go to a dealership, they give me all this paperwork and they get everything feels really official there.
Right.
And the service he was getting didn't blend the results he was getting with the cars.
Right.
The customer service professionalism, it wasn't there to match it.
Exactly.
So he cares about details. He cared about detailing.
Yeah.
And he went, we had a long conversation one night about this. And I was like, oh, okay, I can dig it.
Yeah. And, you know, another one is Detailers Roadmap. It's not a CRM. They are an SEO company. Look them up, detailersroadmap.com.
Chris DiGiovanni.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Again, not a detailer. A passionate business person that has seen too many detailers fail that he wants to help them.
There's so much more to talk about, but should we end it here?
Yeah, I think we'll end it here.
And if you have more questions, man, comment below. Ivan lives for this stuff, and I'm so intrigued by it as well. Having started a detailing business out of pure passion, got my own YouTube channel, always loved detailing, continue to be a detailer, and now we're on this adventure. So I love the business acumen that you bring to the conversation and to the detailing industry.
Thank you very much. And again, like you said, questions and the podcast. If you like them, we're now on Apple Podcasts. We're now on Spotify, all that.
Google Podcasts as well. Wherever you listen to a podcast, we're there. So whether it's YouTube or there, go subscribe to us over there. Leave us a 5-star review. We don't need any 4 stars.
No.
But it'd be great for some love over there to get some traction. We have a lot of listeners and viewers here on YouTube, but obviously we want to reach the most people we can.
Exactly. So thanks a lot.